You're listening to The Word from Westwood, a series of podcasts featuring sermons preached at Westwood United Methodist Church in Los Angeles, California.
No, I haven't forgot. We're going to do a little singing before we start now. Last week, sitting in the back, you all sounded pretty good on that round rejoice in the Lord always. Andrew, this is your cue to get up there to help us. Okay. We're going to go over it once to make sure you all remember it. Let's just all try singing it together. Then we'll break up in the two parts. Remember, rejoice in the Lord always. And again I say rejoice. Rejoice in the Lord always. And again I say rejoice. Rejoice, rejoice. And again I say rejoice. Rejoice, rejoice. And again I say rejoice. Andrew, we're going to let your side start today. But this side's better.
Ready? Rejoice in the Lord always. And again I say rejoice. Rejoice in the Lord always. And again I say rejoice.
Rejoice in the Lord always. And again I say rejoice. Rejoice in the Lord always. And again I say rejoice. Rejoice, rejoice. And again I say rejoice. Rejoice, rejoice. And again I say rejoice. Rejoice in the Lord always. And again I say rejoice. Rejoice in the Lord always. And again I say rejoice. Very good. See, we're just getting them ready for summer choir, right? If you were to look in the various closets in your home, but I think I'll just start with my home today. If you were to look in them, in my closets, in my garage, in my basement, you would find among all of the decorations, and those of you who've been to our house know what I'm talking about, you would find suitcases of various types, sizes, duffel bags, backpacks, and any number of items that would be called baggage when you were to show up at the airport. I don't know how it is for you, but we have a hard time throwing this stuff out. You know what I'm talking about? There are wheels that no longer function on some of the suitcases properly. There are zippers that lost their tabs on vacations long ago. In fact, I always figure with a new suitcase, you lose the zipper tabs the first time out. There are shoulder straps that no longer exist for the duffel bags. And we've got piles of all of those blasted inserts that you're supposed to put inside the suitcases to make packing easier. I have never found those inserts to make packing any easier. How is it for you? To put it succinctly, we have a lot of baggage sitting around our home. I'm not sure why we don't get rid of the spare baggage. Maybe it's the memories that are attached to those items. There are a lot of memories. I can look at the bags and I can remember walking through a hillside village in Tuscany, or I can remember visiting Hagia Sophia in Istanbul, or I can remember the verdant green hills of Ireland. Or you look at some of these bags and you know they're the little ones that used to get packed for slumber parties for the kids. Or some of the bags might remind me of walking on a beautiful beach in Hawaii. Some of the bags I can still remember walking the streets of Vienna or London or Salzburg. I guess on some level, keeping these bags, keeping these items, is an act of hope that there will be another adventure around the corner. Maybe we keep this stuff because of the mentality that you just never want to get rid of things when you never know if you might need them. Yes, a little bit of the depression mentality passed on to my generation. Well, perhaps the real reason we keep this stuff is because it takes way too much work and time to go through all of it to figure out what to get rid of, especially when extra time for most of us is a precious commodity. After all, we rarely want to downsize unless it is something that we are absolutely forced to do. Well, holding on to or carrying a lot of baggage, that's a phrase that's entered a modern idiom for us. It's entered into our culture. And more often or not than when we talk about carrying a lot of baggage, we're often talking about the emotional states in which we find ourselves. And we know that baggage referred to can be any number of things. For some, that baggage might be relational wounds experienced over a period of time, things of which we just cannot seem to find a way to let go. Some have the baggage that was growing up in a family that was on the extreme side of the dysfunctional spectrum. Some carry baggage because of unfulfilled vocational dreams. And just like the physical baggage we may be storing in our homes, the emotional baggage can be so challenging to clear out. Some of it may go so deep that clearing it out really is never going to be a possibility. It is a rare individual among us that doesn't carry baggage of some kind. So I'd like you to stop and to think about it. What kind of baggage? What kind of baggage do we carry with us right now? So I'm going to give us a chance to stop and just to reflect. It's not something you're going to share, but I invite you to grab one of the pens or the pencils around you in your worship guide. And I'd like you to write down and to think about one item of baggage that is a challenge right now. So can we take a moment to do that, to think about what one of those bags might be that we carry around with us? Let's just spend a few moments considering that. Now I'm going to ask you to hold on to that idea, and we're going to refer back to that a little later. Now, one of the things that I find to be very notable, and I'm sure you do too, about our sacred texts, our Bible, is that it presents to us, warts and all, a wide variety of personalities that had their baggage to the extreme. To say that some of these figures had issues is an understatement of significant proportions. There are few figures that come through our biblical stories unscathed, and the Apostle Paul certainly joins those ranks. We are first introduced to him by a brief statement in the book of the Acts of the Apostles. Stephen, who we usually say is the first Christian martyr, had been put to death. And it was noted that Saul, now remember, Saul was Paul's identity before his big conversion experience, that Saul approved of this execution, of the stoning of Stephen. And the next time we hear of Paul is this statement that goes like this: meanwhile, Saul, still breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord, went to the high priest and asked him for letters to the synagogues at Damascus, so that if he found any who belonged to the way — the way was the early group of Christians — whether they be men or women, he might bring them bound to Jerusalem. And of course, the assumption was for their trial and execution. Friends, this was not a nice guy. I cannot even to begin to think of the baggage of tradition that Paul was carrying that would cause him to want to be willingly a part of this persecution. Sometimes, friends, blind faith is real baggage. And add to all of this his conversion experience that eventually was to turn his life upside down, followed by his missionary journeys and his eventual arrest and imprisonment. It is safe to say that this was a man with issues. This was a man who was carrying some baggage. None of this even takes into account the phrase that he used about the thorn in his flesh, which he spoke about in his communication to the church at Corinth. So when we look at our text this morning, where Paul says, "But this one thing I do, this one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and straining forward to what lies ahead, I press on towards the goal for the prize of the heavenly call of God in Jesus Christ." Now think about that, what he's saying once again. Forgetting what lies behind and straining forward to what lies ahead. Those are pretty interesting words to come out of him, don't you think? Paul, it would seem safe to imagine, had a caravan of camels of baggage that he would have liked to have left behind. And those experiences certainly were filtering into the message he shared with those churches of which he was the founder. It is also clear that he probably would have been the first to acknowledge that he had changed radically and that he was now a different man. So it's really important to take this sense of the man that was writing this letter to the church at Philippi and think about what was the baggage he was bringing with him and how did that inform his teaching to this new church. It's an interesting dynamic that had to be at work. Now, when you think about it, a possible response when Paul had finally seen the light and decided that persecution of these folks who were this part of this new religious tradition, well, he didn't want to do that anymore. An appropriate and probably common response would have been just to try to fade away and to hide. Sometimes, don't we wish that we or some of our actions could just be forgotten? That we could sort of fade out of the picture? Well, whether it was ego or hubris or a new sense of mission and purpose or a combination of all of it, Paul did not hide. Instead, he went on to do his mission work that, when you think about it, that's the reason we're here today. We are the result of Paul's missionary work in the mid-first century. Pretty amazing when you think about it. The man with the baggage could be responsible for us sitting here today. So what is this message that he has? Well, as you might have noted, the title for this series as we're moving through Philippians is Rejoice. And today, obviously, it's rejoice even with the baggage that we carry. Paul, in his life and in his instruction to the early church, called people to rejoice in the good news of what the risen Christ meant for them in their lives and how that meant a different future. His was not some sort of naivete. Instead, it was a firm conviction and belief that Paul was not and did not have to be enslaved to his past. You see, he believed it was possible to be recreated and reimagined. What was did not have to forever hinder what could be. Paul's reputation was not a secret. He freely admitted to who he was in his former life. And the other thing we note is it did not stop people eventually from listening to him. You see, other people were also willing to look beyond Paul's baggage because of the hope he had and that hope that it provided for their lives. So really, it's a model of two things at work for us. Paul's being able to get beyond his past and the willingness of others to see beyond his past. You know something? We have a word for this. Grace. Grace. God's grace is something that is not dependent on who we have been. Instead, it is there so that each of us can become the individuals God yearns for us to be. In other words, we can rejoice because in God's eyes, the past is the past, and God calls us to a new kind of future. Of course, most of this is meaningless unless we ask ourselves, how does this really apply to me? How does this apply to our time in our place? We know that getting rid of our baggage is not as easy as saying goodbye. I don't need you anymore. Oh, that it would be that simple. We know that disconnecting with the past in order to connect with the future is work. And sometimes it is extremely difficult work. That certainly was the case for Paul. And it is probably a reasonable assumption that the people at Philippi knew quite well of Paul's struggles to become the person they now knew. They were witnesses to his work to become a different person than the one he had been. And the work that needs to be done for us, well, it may involve asking for forgiveness. Or perhaps it requires working with a therapist or a spiritual director to find healing for old wounds or a better connection to God. Sometimes it requires a concerted effort on our part over a long period of time to form new behaviors and new habits. At the same time, for us to change, if we're going to change, the people around us and their perception of us needs to also become malleable. We joke that the only way that people can change is if they do it on their own. But our behavior often challenges that notion because we try. We try so hard at times to attempt to change people, to tell them what to do, to make them conform to our vision of what they need to be. But that's really not how letting go of the past and attaching ourselves to the future works. Doesn't experience tell us that that approach, that we're going to change the other person, rarely, if ever, works? So whether we inside decide it is time for us to change, or there is someone that we witness in our circle who is trying to change, we know it requires effort, effort on everyone's part. Letting go of baggage, friends, is also not confined to just our individual situations. Letting go of baggage is also something that's part of our corporate experience. Our institutions also carry incredible amounts of baggage. And we live in a time when it seems like this baggage is writ large in front of us, whether it be lingering racism, whether it be a contentment to let the gap between the wealthy and the poor continue to grow and grow and grow. Yes, there's baggage out there. A careful study of church history, for example, could lead any reasonable person to the conclusion that belonging to this institution is dangerous. And we're not talking about a good kind of dangerous. We are living in a time when the ones that have the job of attempting to help the faith community rid itself of the past practice, the past sin, in order to find relevancy and faithfulness to Jesus for the call to the future, we're living in a time where often those people are condemned. Yes, friends, we have baggage. We have baggage. Many have chosen in all of our institutions, in our churches, in our faith communities, to take up the work of reform. But at the same time, we continue to come across those who insist on clinging to a past and an expression of the institution that represents anything but Jesus' teaching. Remember, change can only come about when individually we want to change and when we are willing to let the things around us change. Yeah, it's a mess. Let's admit it. It's a mess. But friends, in spite of the messiness, we still show up here on Sunday mornings, and I'm willing to stand in this pulpit on Sunday mornings, in spite of the messiness, because we're called to rejoice. And why do we rejoice? We rejoice because we know that God is with us in the midst of all of this messiness. We know that God's grace and God's forgiveness and God's love will never abandon us, no matter where we find ourselves. We rejoice because God's story is always one of people who are able to leave behind baggage and instead find new hope. We rejoice because the last thing our world needs at this point in time is more cynics who no longer have the imagination or the passion for something better and something more hopeful. Yes, we can rejoice in the midst of all the baggage we carry. I didn't forget. Remember that note you made yourself earlier today? Take a look at that again. What was it you wrote? And remember, friends, we're called to rejoice even with our list. We're called to rejoice. How might God be calling us to let go of the past and move to a bold, new, grace-filled future? Amen.
Westwood United Methodist Church is located at 10497 Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, between Westwood Village and Beverly Hills. Sundays are at the heart of this faith community's life, and we invite you to worship every Sunday at 10 a.m. A wide variety of opportunities for all ages are also available every week. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.westwoodumc.org or call the church office at area code 310-474-4511. I'm Janet Hoskins. Westwood United Methodist Church. Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God.